C1AP. Number 20B.
Then it comes to Christianity in Absolute Christian Science, which is symbolized through life and love. And here you see that very clearly, that life and love. The vision is now, and I saw thrones. Now it's no more an angel coming down like the Christ. Now Christianity is that point where the idea is enthroned, where it does not need to be saved anymore, where there is no need to lay down the mortal anymore. That was all right on the level of Christian Science, but on the level of Christian Science, you are exalted above it, you are enthroned. And he gives a picture of life and love as the first resurrection, and then in love as the second resurrection, or the overcoming of the second death. In life he shows that his soul, all the souls of them that were giving testimony to Jesus and therefore were persecuted because of Jesus and were martyrs and therefore were beheaded for the testimony of Jesus and for the word of God. You see, they were beheaded for the word and for the Christ. And so here in Christianity they are now saved. That for the first time the Revelator doesn't say, well, too bad for you, but you have to wait still a little while. Huh? Here now, they don't have to wait anymore a little while, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. This is the first resurrection. So you begin to see that life is something more than life in matter, that it is life when you sit on the throne, when you are no more considering how much life in matter do I have, and is that perfect and harmonious or not, but when we resurrect ourselves above matter, above the body, and see that life has nothing to do with the body, then we begin to reign with the Christ for 1,000 years. This is the first resurrection. We resurrect ourselves out of the belief of life in matter. Whereas then love gives even a higher sense of it. And I saw a great white throne, only one throne, before it were thrones, a white throne. And then he goes on until finally he says, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. You see, when he showed that when we come to the realization that there is not even a suggestion of death to be handled, because sitting on the throne of life, we begin to realize more and more that really only life that is spiritual matters, and therefore love tells us therefore that is final and eternal and final, therefore never consider any more really the suggestion that you have to resurrect yourself, that you were always exalted above everything, that death and hell were cast into the lake of fire, that the concept that there could be death is handled. Not only to handle that we overcome somehow the belief in death, but much more to see that there is no belief in death, and that the belief in death is just a belief, and is cast into the lake of fire. So, in this way, he depicts these three aspects of the word Christ and Christianity in Absolute Christian Science. You had that, I didn't mention it, on page 9 of the blue study material. And so now we come to the fourth side in the Absolute Christian Science, where we come to Absolute Christian Science as science. And there it is where Mrs. Eddy takes up the subject again. So we turn to the textbook and take the textbook at that point, on page 572, line 19, in Revelation 21, verse 1, we read. We know where we are. And the epitomes that I have given you are on page 4, on the white sheet, on the white epitomes study material. So if you have that side by side, we can read together the text. I think the best is if we read it right through together. It's so concentrated that it is better we read the text than if I tell you what is in it. We watch just one thing, namely that here we come to the vision of absolute Christian science as science, which we symbolize with truth and love in the chart. And you see here when we read the text that actually Mrs. Eddy follows that order, that she first presents truth in the text and then love in the text, and in both cases from the standpoint of absolute Christian science and not from the standpoint of Christian science. So, the vision that we have here from the Revelator is, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. In Genesis, Mrs. Eddy actually interprets that verse, and she says there that heaven and earth are actually states of consciousness of the idea. It is that heaven always stands for the consciousness of ideas, not of thoughts, consciousness of ideas, and the earth for the demonstration of the idea. So there is a new consciousness, the consciousness of our idea, compared with before in absolute Christian science. We had more just thoughts and the activities of ideas and the using of ideas. Now we get the consciousness of ideas. No more how we use scientific thought or how with thinking we use ideas. Now we have the consciousness of ideas, and that demonstrates itself as earth, as the formation of true ideas. The text that Mrs. Eddy gives here is the following. We understand it better, the whole paragraph, when we first read the marginal heading. The marginal heading says, man's present possibilities. We see now first that what Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out, that we have here and now, though we still seem to live on a human material plane of existence, that in spite of that we have here and now the possibility to touch the level of absolute Christian science, which is concerned only with spiritual facts and no more with the relationship of spirit to matter and the overcoming of matter with spirit, that this is still a present possibility, though we are still living on this earth. What he wants to show really is to give an answer to the objection that people have that say, well, I'm still on the level of Christian science and I cannot go to the level of absolute Christian science or divine science or even science itself before I have not demonstrated fully the level of the level of Christian science. And this is a great mistake, because that would mean that the development of the spiritual development is dependent on matter. on the measure how much we have overcome matter. The idea is not dependent on matter. The idea is not dependent on our human character. The idea is not dependent on how much we have already overcome every aspect of matter and of evil. The idea is only dependent on consciousness, on our form of consciousness, and that is what he wants to bring out here. And perhaps you watch something, which I can point out later on again, watch how much she's speaking about consciousness. She speaks about, she speaks about consciousness. Do you remember when she was presenting the 10th chapter of Revelation in her book, namely those two pages about the little book open, that she was not using the term idea, that she was not using the term consciousness, but only the term thought, scientific thought. The moment she explained the woman, which is the idea of God, from that point on, the text was packed full with the terms spiritual idea, true idea, the idea of God. Idea, idea, idea. There is no other place in the whole of the textbook where you have so many statements about the term idea as in those few pages where she explains the 12th chapter. Just make a mental note. But when we come now to Absolute Christian Science, we'll see that she hardly mentions idea, and when she mentions it, she has a definite reason. But now it's all about consciousness. So that you already see there is an order given which says a student usually starts out with thinking, then he has to learn to think scientifically. Then when he begins to learn to think scientifically, there must come a point where he begins to see that thoughts don't matter, that thoughts are actually translated form of ideas, so that all that matters are ideas, and he begins to realize that he should entertain ideas, and that mind entertains ideas, not he entertains so much ideas, but mind is ideas are mind's ideas. And now finally you come to the point that as far as we entertain mind's ideas, that they become consciousness, that they take the place of consciousness. And therefore, oust out, that's not the right word, that the divine consciousness takes the place where before we had human consciousness. So let's watch that. So I read the text here. The Revelator had not yet passed the transitional stage in human experience called death, but he already saw a new heaven and a new earth. So here she picks up man's present possibility. Says, you can't tell me that because you have not yet demonstrated everything in the human plane of thought, you have not overcome every aspect of matter, that you cannot see a higher vision, a purely spiritual vision. You can. That's the very first thing we have to admit to ourselves. Through what sense came this vision to St. John? Not through a material visual organ for seeing, for optics are inadequate to take in such a wonderful scene. So she says, material eyes cannot see the vision of spirit. So independent of your visual seeing. Where this new heaven and new earth, terrestrial or celestial, material or spiritual? That's a question. They could not be the former, so they could not be the material or terrestrial, for the human sense of space is unable to grasp such a view. Now she says, also the human sense cannot grasp the vision of spirit. Think of it. Not even the human sense can grasp it. The Revelator was on our plane of existence, while yet beholding what the eye cannot see. And you see, she wants to bring out in various ways, always the same thing, that spiritual vision is independent of matter and of the human sense. So it was, while yet beholding what eye cannot see, that which is invisible to the uninspired thought. This testimony of Holy Writ sustains the fact in science. Now comes the conclusion, so to say, that concerns us, that the heavens and earth, to one human consciousness, just make a mark to one human consciousness, that consciousness which God bestows are spiritual, while to another, the unindumined human mind, the vision is material. So, more or less, she says, you can look at the same thing in two ways. Everything that you behold with your eyes, you can behold with your eyes, but you also can behold it with your spiritual vision. Jesus saw in science the perfect man, who appeared right there where for the human material sense mortal man appeared. So it isn't the thing itself that matters, it's the consciousness with which we consider something that matters. This shows unmistakably that what the human mind terms matter and spirit indicates states and stages of consciousness. So it's a whole paragraph on consciousness already that begins to define that really to one human consciousness something can be material, to another human consciousness something can be spiritual. It can be both, it can be the very opposite. It all depends what kind of human consciousness we have. Is it the consciousness that is a translated sense of the divine consciousness, or is it a human consciousness that has been formed by our uninspired thought and by the visual organs and what we see with our eyes? So she introduces here how it is possible that while we still tabernacle on earth, like John did, that we still may experience sickness, sin, disease, death, we still, to a certain measure, can already see the new heaven and the new earth. And only in this way can we actually get out of our material state of things. We can only get out if something higher than our material concept is at work and is entertained, and not by improving our material sense of things. That is the tilling of the soil. That's what Adam did. So we come here to the point of and have seen the tone of truth, which we have epitomized and said on the epitomes, we have said, all is a matter of consciousness. The consciousness which God bestows is a scientific consciousness. And we'll see that. But now we come to the tone of love. With the next paragraph, naturally there is always a transition from one paragraph to the next. And the next paragraph is actually not a exegesis of the verse that she had quoted of Revelation 21:1. Up to this point, she has interpreted that new heaven and new earth, that is possible. But from now on, from line 13 down to line 23, she actually interprets another verse of Revelation. namely the verse 3, 21:3. In 21:3, the Revelator said, "And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God." Can you hear? There's no more the tone of truth. There's typically the tone of love, where God and man is one, where God and man coincide. The tone of love, where love never loses sight of loveliness, where there is the coexistence of love and love's idea. So at this very juncture, we get the tone of love, and our epitome for that is that with such a scientific consciousness, the law of love offers full compensation for the sum total of human misery. Can you see the relationship of those two epitomes? The first epitome of truth said that actually everything is a matter of consciousness. It depends on consciousness if you have a universe of evil or if you have a universe of good. What he wants to say is the truth about something lies not in the thing itself, but in the consciousness with which you look at it. That's the point. When he has established this scientific fact, then he can say, well then, in this case, you can have a compensation for everything that seems to be evil. For everything that seems to be evil, if you have a right consciousness, you can make out of evil good. That's a very logical sequence. What is that attitude, or which synonymous term is responsible for such an attitude, which says, instead that I look at evil, I see only the idea of good? Isn't that love? The synonymous term love has always that sense. Love never loses sight of loveliness. Love which is never without its object or manifestation, can never see anything unlike itself. And it remains love even if it finds no response, even if to the human eye it is different. So, let's watch how over quite a long period now in the textbook, she begins to tell us, look here, all is a matter of consciousness, I have told you that. Now, take the standpoint of absolute Christian Science, where you go out from love, and then you have only a universe of love. So, first, as I said, she gives this interpretation that God is with men, that there is the coexistence in love, the coexistence of principle and idea. So she says, accompanying this scientific consciousness, this is a, what is grammatically, what call you say, a retrospective word? This, it points backward, huh? This relates to the paragraph before, huh? And says, what I have shown here in truth, that everything is a question of consciousness, says this is a scientific consciousness, when you begin to see that it is a question that you can decide what is right, what is truth. So accompanying this scientific consciousness was another revelation. So she speaks now about another revelation, namely about Revelation 21, verse 3, even the declaration from heaven's supreme harmony that God, the divine principle of harmony, is ever with men. We read that in the Bible. And they are his people. Can you hear the tone of love, the coincidence of principle and idea? That's love, huh? Which afterwards is shown then as the bride, huh? The Lamb's wife, that coincidence. Thus man was no longer regarded as a miserable sinner. No longer. He may be humanly a sinner. he can be defined as a sinner humanly. But now, he says, with what I have shown you, what the scientific consciousness is, he may no longer be regarded as a sinner, but as the blessed child of God. So he replaces the sinner with the blessed child of God. Says, that all depends on your consciousness. That does not depend on reality. In reality, man is always the idea of God. Why? Because St. John's corporeal sense of the heavens and earth had vanished. Because he said there was a new heaven and earth. So the old heaven and earth had vanished. And in place of this false sense was the spiritual sense. What is that spiritual sense? The subjective state by which he could see the new heaven and the new earth, which involves, just as far as here, the subjective state. See, we have an objective state if we look with our eyes, with the visual organs. That is the objective state. Objectively, we can say, I see a sinner. Objectively, I see a whole world of evil. But he said, it depends on your consciousness, therefore make it subjective. And with a subjective state, if that subjective state is scientific, then you can only see the new heaven and the new earth. You can only see a universe of reality, a universe of spiritual reality, a universe of harmony. So this subjective state by which he could see the new heaven and new earth, which involves, and that is interesting, which involves the spiritual idea and consciousness of reality. Here you have both stages. And it says, in order to do that, you need two things. You need first to know what ideas are, or you cannot have a scientific consciousness. So it involves the spiritual idea. It involves first that we can see what are ideas, what are illusions. But that's not enough. That's only making a distinction. What it must be cultured and come about is the consciousness also of reality. So we see again what I said before. The line of development is that first we have a thinking state of things, then we begin to see we can separate between ideas and illusions, and so we see ideas are reality. But then finally we must say, I'm not thinking about ideas, but ideas must be a consciousness of reality. So that through the culture and loving and pondering of ideas, we come to the point where we feel that we have a consciousness of reality. And that is the point. I stop here.